Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 171 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin talks to Rob Walling about how to be a solopreneur, all coming up in Internet Marketing.
So Rob, I understand that recently you've purchased an interesting SEO tool that you've used in the past. Can you tell us a bit about kind of how that came to pass in terms of you taking on a tool that perhaps wasn't one that, you know, you created from scratch, as it were?
Sure. Yeah. So I had been using this tool called Hittail since it launched in 2006. And over the past couple of years, it started having a lot of downtime. And I eventually contacted the owners, since I'm a software developer and I own some software products and web applications myself. I contacted the owner, you know, kind of asking what was up, if they had abandoned the tool, and if they'd be willing to kind of sell it to, you know, an entrepreneur. And it turns out that they hadn't abandoned it, but they were not doing enough maintenance on it, and it was having pretty significant downtime. So over the course of a couple of months, we negotiated a price, and I acquired it.
And, you know, that must be an interesting way of kind of picking up a tool rather than building it from scratch. Is there kind of anything that, like, you know, the process of doing that? Is that something you've done in the past in terms of acquiring tools like that? Or is this, it's a bit of a first?
I have done it in the past. Yeah. I've actually bought quite a few websites in the past. I've bought a handful of web applications, probably around, it's probably 8 or 10 web applications now. And I've probably bought more than 30 websites.
So something you're well accustomed to, and you've done quite a lot as well. So can you take us a bit through kind of how Hittail works and kind of some of the functionality of that? Because I know it's a tool that, you know, when you started talking to me about it, I was like, blimey, why have I not heard of this before? And, you know, why is it not something that I've been using more frequently? Because it sounds like a really powerful tool.
Hittail is it's for SEOs, and it's also used on e-commerce websites, and some bloggers use it. And basically it's for SEOs who want to find keywords for which they can easily rank on the first page of a search engine. So often that's Google, but sometimes it's Yahoo or Bing. And so it's essentially an SEO keyword tool. And what it does is it analyzes your website's traffic, and it gives you proprietary data. It gives you real time, in essence. It gives you suggestions for keywords that you should be targeting but aren't. So it's keywords that you would easily rank for without effort. And so unlike, I think the real differentiator is I've used WordTracker and MarketSamurai and MicroNiche Finder and those tools, and the Google AdWords keyword tool, and those all kind of mostly use the same corpus of data, and that's what Hittail doesn't do, right? It actually looks at your proprietary data that no one else has. It looks at your traffic and analyzes it.
And do you think, is there kind of a challenge to that model a little bit with the kind of recent changes that Google are making to kind of essentially hide a big chunk of the keyword referring data there?
Yeah, so that's actually a common question I get, and it did impact us. It dropped the suggestions we could provide by about 10%. So yeah, there are some people, you know, we often are able to provide between 20 and a few hundred suggestions in a month. And so now for those who used to get 20, they get 18. So it's not the end of the world, but obviously it is down the line. If Google continues this path, then yeah, Hittail might have an issue at point.
I suppose it's still an additional suggestion, isn't it? So 18 keywords that you could rank very well for that you don't know about is still incredibly valuable, even though if like last month it could have been 20, 18 is still 18, isn't it?
That's right. And it's helpful for people who are both creating content. I mean, one of the most common uses for the keyword suggestions is to go and write a blog post about it, or to just, you know, write an article or have someone write an article. And that will tend to rank right on the first page of that search engine right away, just because it's, well, because the algorithm is fairly smart. And so that's the most common occurrence. And then other people I'm finding are using the suggestions. They're kind of using them in new ways that I hadn't thought about. But there are a number of customers using them for link text when they go and build links. You know, you've talked about how, you know, you'll have maybe 50% of your links you want with a certain phrase, your head phrase, and then you want to mix it up the other 50%. Well, people are taking their suggestions and using them as the other 50%, essentially, as the link text.
And I think that's incredibly powerful. I mean, there's been some, you know, real shifts and change in Google over the last couple of weeks, even, where it seems that there's these messages that are going out in Google Webmaster Tools to, you know, kind of illustrating Google saying, we think you've got dodgy links, essentially. And there's kind of seems to be two areas that, you know, that's setting off this trigger. One is people using blog networks to build links. And like websites like Build My Rank have had all of their network de-index as a consequence of that. And that seems to be one area. But the other one seems to be, it's kind of where people have over targeted a particular keyword anchor text phrase. And, you know, actually, it's always been sensible to kind of include a variety of keywords in your anchor text. But it does seem to be that that's very much the direction it's headed in. So Tool then kind of give you indications of what you ought to be thinking about there. I suppose it's quite useful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things I always struggle with, you know, as an SEO is finding all those kind of the link anchor text that I'm going to use, right? It's like easy to find that head term, and then you're just kind of making up the rest. You're kind of looking through Google Analytics and grabbing out, you know, different ideas from there. So, you know, Hittail obviously helps with that.
And, you know, so kind of moving on from Hittail, it's a great tool. I recommend everyone has a look at it to check out. You know, one of the things that you've kind of really, you know, talked about a lot in the past, Rob, is kind of, you know, bootstrapped solopreneur kind of, you know, businesses where you've kind of set up and it's self-funded startups. Can you tell us a bit about kind of how you came into that process and kind of some of the things that you've been involved with in terms of kind of promoting that as a cause, as an idea, really?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a software developer from way back. And over the course of several years in the early 2000s, I was a consultant. And I realized that I didn't want to do that forever, right? It's like dollars for hours. And I didn't really want to be chasing down my next project when I was 50 years old. And so I was trying to figure out a way to kind of get out of that. And I found that a lot of software developers and even consultants and designers and entrepreneurs feel the same way, right? They're kind of stuck in this job. And the only way out I could see was to go big and to raise venture funding and you know, do something like Y Combinator or just I live near the Bay Area. And so I was going to raise millions of dollars and try to have this big exit so that I could have freedom of time. And in essence, I found there's another way. And what I've done is I built and launched a few different software products and websites, and they started generating a little bit of money. You know, it was several hundred dollars a month at first. And then as I grew them into a few thousand bucks a month, I realized, wow, if I had a few more of these, if I actually had a number of small products and small niches, there's a little competition, and I could essentially make enough money that I wouldn't have to consult anymore, and I could live off the products. And so that's what I did. I actually started acquiring them at one point. Because there are a lot of good products on the market or good products around like Hittail. But I also have invoicing software. I have a software in a wedding website building niche. Just, you know, kind of random niches, but they're so low competition in terms of SEO and advertising and all that stuff that I'm able to make it work. And so that's what I did. Almost 5 years ago now, I stopped consulting altogether and I live off product revenue.
And, you know, is that kind of quite a different mindset that you've had to work in, kind of moving from that kind of build, you know, potentially having a relatively small number of clients, as it were, on big projects to having potentially thousands of customers if you're dealing with kind of software as service?
Yeah, it has. And something that's helped me a lot with that is I have a couple virtual assistants. I do a lot of outsourcing. As a single, I'm basically a solopreneur, so I don't have any employees. But since I have about 10 different essentially products, you know, they're either websites or web applications. Since I have 10 of them, I really couldn't do it all myself. So I do have anywhere between 6 and 8 contractors who work for me in any given month. All of them are part-time. All of them are remote. Some are in the U.S., some are in Canada, and some are overseas. And so that has been a critical piece to help me manage all that, right? Like you said, I literally have thousands of customers for all of these apps, and they help manage their app. They help manage that support load.
And have you got any advice on kind of finding those contractors? Because recently I've gone, I've long heard the advice that you ought to have a virtual assistant, and, just this year went down that route. And I went down the route of advertising on Gumtree and actually found someone in the same city as me, as it transpires. But, that was just how it ended up. That wasn't the design. And that was kind of just an added bonus that kind of ticked an extra kind of column in her box. But kind of how did you go about kind of these contractors? It's kind of Odesk. Is that kind of the route that you went down?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question. I've gone four or five paths over the past 4 or 5 years. And essentially Odesk is what I do these days. I stopped using Craigslist for it. I stopped using job boards. I was on Elance for a while. I mean, I kind of tried all the routes, and really at this point, Odesk has worked out well for my last couple of hires. So that's what I'd recommend.
And any advice on putting together those job descriptions or, how you should, weed out, because I had the opposite problem. That my problem was I got inundated with applications rather than kind of, I thought my problem might be I'd have no one applying, but instead I had kind of 150 people to deal with.
Yeah, that's very common. So yeah, if you're going to post a job for something as common as a VA where kind of everyone could apply, the same holds for PHP developers or WordPress developers. There's just a lot of folks out there who do it. And if you're going to do that, you really need to limit.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
You limit your scope because you will get too many applicants. And so what I tend to do, first, I write the job description like I'm a person, not like I'm a corporation. And I do inject some personality into it, and I try to make the job attractive because that's the only way you're going to get the best candidates is to talk the job up a bit. I mean, you have to be realistic, but you do have to kind of let people know that it's a cool job. At the same time, I'm pretty strict. I say only apply if you have these specific skills. And then in Odesk, you can limit it. And you can basically say only if they have 5 out of 5 English skills, no matter where in the world, including if they're living in the US or in the UK, you need really good written English and spoken English. And then I will limit, that they only have a certain amount of feedback. They have a certain number of Odesk hours worked. Mm. You can kind of be picky when you're looking for just a blanket VA. Mm. And so I tend to get – when my last VA posting, I only got, instead of 150, like you said, I think I got in the 40s, maybe 45, which is much more manageable. And then I was able to quickly knock out about 25, just right off the bat, and then kind of sift through and interview the top three.
And have you kind of got any tips on kind of managing the tasks as well? Because, actually having read books like, 4-Hour Work Week, I was kind of very concerned about kind of how to explain my tasks, as it were. When actually I transpired, it's like, Nicola, who I work with, she very good at dealing, you know, understanding much gibberish. But, you know, have you found any tips and recommendations for kind of how to work with people remotely when you've only really got email perhaps as the main form of communication?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that is how I communicate with everyone. Typically, when I first hire them, I do one video Skype chat just so we've seen each other face to face once and heard each other's voices. And then after that, I will literally go years without ever talking to them. And that's and what we but we, you know, we might IM or email once a week or twice a week. So there is communication. It's just not verbal. And the way to answer your original question, the way I communicate tasks, I use a lot of – it's basically screencasts and Google Docs. And so I will – I mean, I record two or three screencasts a day now. And often they're very short, and I use – I'm on PC, so I use Camtasia Studio. And in 3 minutes, I can explain – you know, you can explain something that would take 10 minutes, 20 minutes to write out in a doc. And then with one click, you can basically publish it to screencast.com, which is Camtasia's, you know, on hosting things. So you don't have to render it and upload it. I mean, it just kind of does it in one step. And then if it's a particularly complicated process and I think that they're going to need to refer to it a lot, I will also then put some bullet points together that kind of match up with the screencast so that they can watch the screencast once or twice and then refer back to the bullet points for in the Google Doc for essentially years to come. And I think the other thing is to get the most out of a virtual assistant is the first things you should outsource are the things you, the recurring tasks, things that you do once a week, once a month, because that will that just buys you time. You're basically making time for the next, you know, years, as long as the person works for you.
And I know you're kind of organizing a conference related to this kind of self-funded startups and kind of solopreneur type stuff. Is it kind of a trend that you're seeing more and more people head in this direction, Rob?
It is. You know, we have a large worldwide audience. I say we, it's I have a podcast and a blog and this conference. And I'm just amazed at the number of people who where this idea resonates with them. And I think what has happened is there's a bit of a, I guess backlash, too strong a word, but it's kind of like if you don't live in the Bay Area or in, you know, a city with a lot of venture capitalists and you aren't willing to kind of work 60, 70 hour weeks and take some risk and work for sub market wages, then it's really hard to start a startup. You know, to do a big idea. And so this idea of starting small and being able to launch a product on the side that maybe only makes a few hundred dollars a month to start with, but that you can do while you're working full time, while you have a family. I mean, I'm 37. I have two kids. I did all of this, you know, while I was doing my real life, and you can kind of grow it on the side gradually. And I think that idea resonates really well with people.
But do you think you need to be a software kind of guy to run these types, because it's only really work if you can build a software tool.
Right. I don't. I think that it helps, although these days I try to write as little code as possible because there are people who can do that as good as or better than I am who are much, much cheaper. You know, like my big value prop these days is in high-level thinking. And so I actually encourage software developers to try to outsource some of it and to try to cut down on how much they develop. So the ultimate answer is no, you don't need to be a software person. It does help in managing, you know, because obviously you're going to, if you're going to do anything on the web, you need to have some type of software knowledge, even if you're not building software. I mean, one of my products is a job board. You know, it's a job board for electricians. And you don't need to know, it's an off-the-shelf job board. You don't need to know software to do that, but it does help to know it is written in PHP and it helps to know a little bit of the basics, even if you are going to hire out the development. So, but we have many, I have many developers and you know, internet marketers and SEOs and those type of folks who do, you know, implement my kind of my ideas.
And I suppose that's where the talent is. There is, it's in that kind of knowing who the right person to hire is, isn't it? That I think can sometimes that knowledge can be really powerful, where it's the kind of being able to tell who is the real deal and who's someone who's kind of bluffing a little bit potentially. And, you know, particularly if you're not able to, you know, shake their hand and, you know, look them in the eye, it's the kind of that extra bit of knowledge can really help you avoid getting stung there, you know, potentially as well.
And that's right.
And in terms of kind of other people that you look up to in the world of kind of self-funded startups, is there anyone in particular that you recommend is worth kind of going out and having a look at what that, you know, who's sharing their knowledge that people, if they've kind of listened to the podcast and goes, actually, I've got this really great idea for a software product or something that I could launch around my day job that I think would be really useful and, you know, who they ought to be looking at for kind of advice on this besides yourself?
Sure. There are a number of them. One is if folks are into podcasting, there's good podcast called the Lifestyle Business Podcast. Mm-hmm. There's also one called the Startup Success Podcast that I like. And I actually like Mixergy quite a bit. Mixergy.com. Yeah, those are good podcasts. And then in terms of the blogs, Jason Cohen's blog is called A Smart Bear is Good. And then there's a guy named Patrick McKenzie, and he has a great blog. It's calzumeus.com. But if you just search Patrick McKenzie blog, you'll find it. He's the bingo card creator guy. He built a whole empire out of bingo card creator software.
Okay, so. Fantastic. No, I mean, it's a really interesting world, isn't it? And I think it's actually, you know, really exciting is that what you've got is, you know, for individuals, they can work on a, you know, a number of projects. They can kind of, you know, try out all of their ideas, potentially see, you know, it's kind of an almost a, like almost having your own kind of venture capital approach, isn't it? But kind of on a much more micro level, isn't it? It's the kind of, you've got 10 ideas, try all 10 of them out, and, you know, not all 10 of them necessarily will be the most successful in the world, but a few of those are going to be, you know, more successful. And, you know, it's, you can almost be your own venture capitalist in that sense, I suppose, isn't it?
That's a good analogy for it. Yeah, I've heard someone say Rob has his own personal conglomerate, right? Because it's a multiple products, so... Yeah.
And it's one final question for you, Rob, as well, before we go. In terms of kind of, you know, you've got your multiple products there as well. Do you think that there's a benefit to them being in kind of, you know, you talked about yours kind of being, you know, electrician job board, wedding software, you know, now an SEO tool. Do you, you know, is it kind of a deliberate conscious decision to try and keep those quite separate? Or do you think that there's a benefit to potentially, you know, working within a niche so you can kind of share audiences between the tools, do you think?
I would love if all my products were in the same niche, because I would have so much ability to provide a full package for people and cross promote. But lately the acquisitions are just all over the place. And if I see a good deal that I think I can make happen, I will do it no matter what the niche. So, but yeah, I've actually had the most success. You know, I have a blog and a podcast in the same niche, and then we launched a conference, and then I wrote a book in that niche. And then the SEO tool actually relates a little bit to that, because I, you know, in terms of building apps. And so those things that do relate have been my most successful. But that doesn't mean that I also like the diversification of being in multiple niches. You know, when we had the recession, when it started a few years ago, all my B2B stuff just plummeted in the month, but my consumer stuff kept up. And then I've had other times where my consumer revenue really drops, but my B2B stuff stays up. So, I think there is some benefit to it, but yeah, I think if I could control it, I would probably stick all in the same niche if I was building all my own stuff.
Fantastic. Well, I think there's some great advice there. I mean, I think even just from the kind of perspective of going and checking out Hittail, I think that's great advice there as well. But I think also, you know, what Rob's up to is really interesting. I think kind of a very inspirational story that I imagine will probably have resonated with quite a few of our listeners themselves. So yeah, definitely go and check out Rob's blog and podcast. I'm a big fan of the podcast myself. I can't recommend it enough.
No, thanks.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.